welcome to the Hometown Real Estate Heroes Podcast. My name is Mitch Steven, and I am the founder, the sponsor, and sometimes even the host of this podcast. And this podcast is designed specifically to help you achieve your financial freedom, no matter where you have to go to find that independence. Our mission is to help you fire your boss and quit your job so that you can free up 2,600 hours a year to find out who you're supposed to be and to become the person you are supposed to become on this planet. So I invite you to subscribe, like, and share so that you can watch others that are on their way or have already accomplished this financial independence and are well on their way to becoming the person they are supposed to be. If you know of a guest that should be on this podcast, please go to 1000houses.com. That's 1000houses.com/podcast2. That's the number 2, /apply.
Welcome to this episode of Hometown Real Estate Heroes. Today we are talking to David Grabiner. He is with Lubono Capital in Tennessee, and we are excited to talk to him about his journey for real estate and what he has been doing to turn real estate into a solid source of income for him. So welcome to the show, David.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Miranda. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So as we get started, why don't you start out by telling us a little bit about how you got started in real estate. What was the need that kind of put you here into this position where you wanted to do real estate? And what was your first deal?
Okay. So interestingly enough, I was working in the Democratic Republic of Congo as a hospital administrator.
Oh, well, okay. Very interesting. Okay, let's get there.
So not your normal starting point for a real estate investor. And I decided I want to have financial independence. And the quickest way to get there, I thought, would be to start buying real estate. I had no idea what it was going to turn into. But like I said, I was working over there full time. And I partnered with my father, who was still in the States at the time, to buy just a quadplex. So it's just going to be like, okay, we buy one quadplex, little investment property, and see how it goes. And that's basically the start of it.
So now you said you partner with your father. Is that something that where he kind of provided the capital and you did some of the other stuff, or did you guys put in capital equally? Like how did that work?
So we both put in the equal amount of money for the down payment, but we got the loans in his name. Since I was working in Africa, it was impossible for them to verify any of my income. So they only counted my dad's income, but it's not a problem. We put the loans in my dad's name, but we both put in the same amount for down payment, and we kind of worked as equal partners in it.
Okay. Very cool. So how was that? A lot of the time we talk about working with family and how it can cause some friction and some problems. So let's just right out the gate, let's talk about that a little bit. How was partnering with your father? Did it cause any problems, or did you guys manage to like keep that a good business relationship? And was it successful enough that you didn't have to worry about it?
So amazingly enough, I guess I'm very fortunate that my father and I have similar thoughts when it comes to money, and we really trust each other with financial decisions. So there wasn't any of that problem like, oh, what's he doing with the money or what you're doing with the money. It's very full of trust. Now, we drew up an agreement, but it went really well. And honestly, I think it helped me become closer with my father, because then we were doing something together. We had something that we're working on, and we've been doing it now going on almost 7 years, and we're still together in partners in this. So I would say it's worked out pretty well.
Very nice. Now, so you talked about you wanted the financial freedom, and that's kind of what was your driving force behind deciding to get into real estate. So why did you choose real estate over some of the other options out there? What made real estate so appealing to you?
Well, I was looking for cash flow, basically. So I was like, okay, if I'm going to have financial freedom, I need cash flow. And yeah, I could put a bunch of it in an index fund. And if I grow it big enough, then I could have a 4% safe withdrawal rate and yada, yada, yada. But that was going to take a long time. So then I started looking at real estate. It's like, okay, if I can get a 20% cash on cash return, and if I can grow this over 5 years, you know, I could have a significant cash flow that would be good enough for my family to just be financially independent. And that was the original goal, just like, I think it was $30,000 a year, because we were living pretty frugally back then. And so just, you know, get enough properties, have $30,000 a year, and that's it. What I didn't know was things were going to change, and my father got misdiagnosed. But at the time, we thought he only had 6 months to live, and he had a condition with his liver where they thought he had a tumor on his liver. And so I said, okay, we're dropping everything. We're leaving Africa. We're moving back to Tennessee to be close to my dad. You know, he only has a few months to live. And then fortunately, they misdiagnosed him. Now, he does have a liver issue. And so I decided, you know what? I want to move back and be closer to my father so he can be with the grandkids and everything, because he does have this issue. It's just not as bad as we thought it would be.
Right.
So that's when I was like, okay, now I'm leaving Africa. Now I'm going to do real estate full time. And if I'm going to do it full time, now let's step it up and go even further. You know, $30,000 a year is just not enough living in the States. You know, let's see how big we can grow this.
Yeah. So then what were some of the steps you took to grow it? Let's talk about some of those practical things. Like, how do you start scaling up? Now, you started with this fourplex, you know, you're getting some cash flow from this fourplex, but how did you start scaling that up? What were some of the steps that you had to take to kind of start taking that business to the next level?
So first step I was taking was I was being really financially responsible and saving all my money for down payments. Like, not taking any money back out of the cash flow. All of it was getting reinvested, and on also taking money from my salary and investing that as well. So we did that for about 3 years, just nothing fancy, just your basic save money and invest it. And that gave me a good foundation so that I had that cash flow that when I went to do it full time, I already had something there to support me. Now, to grow it, once I started doing it full time, it was amazing because I was focused completely in it. And I started networking with people, and I started finding more deals, and I started finding people who were like, oh, wait, what do you do? And like, can I invest with you? And can I partner with you? And just the opportunities just started growing. But it started with a good base of, here are good properties that are working fine, that we just did the traditional save your money and invest in them.
Okay. So now you talk about networking a little bit and finding people who wanted to invest with you. So I imagine that's kind of how Lubono Capital got started, right? Where people were like, here, let me give you my money. And so you were able to start using, you know, that whole, you know, OPM, other people's money, to like really kind of start moving forward. So how do you go about finding that networking? How do you go about finding those folks who want to invest and partner with you?
So a lot of it started just from our own, and mostly actually my father's, just personal network, you know, people who've known him for a long time, and just having those conversations, and not just like just trying to sell people on it, but just like, it's surprising how many people have like 100 or 200,000 just like there that they want to invest in real estate, but don't have time to do it. So that's really where it started, just like the close circle of like friends and family, not really family, mostly just like family friends. Who wanted to do something. And then as I started doing it, having more success, it's kind of just grown out from there organically. Now, I do go to a lot of networking events. Mm-hmm. COVID kind of slowed that down, but it's amazing. And when I go to a networking event, I just try to talk to everybody in the room that I don't know. So if there's a new person there, I don't care if they're brand new, they've never done a deal, whatever it is, because you never really know someone's story until you spend the time to talk with them. So that's my goal. Every time I go to a networking event, okay, yeah, I want to see my old friends and we'll talk a little bit, but I want to make sure that I talk to everyone in that room that I don't know and get to know them. And I've found people who had like $700,000 they were wanting to invest, and everyone else in the room just thought they were just a newbie because they were young. Mm-hmm. and they didn't look like they had money. But in talking to them, yeah, they had a lot of money to invest.
Nice. So really, for you, it's about finding those relationships, building those relationships, and really getting to know people and not making face value assumptions.
That's right. That's right. And I like to do it more, like, I'm not doing big syndications where I'm just trying to get money from everywhere and anywhere and advertise for it or anything like that. all my deals are just done with like a small number of investors. You know, it's more like we're more in a partnership. Oftentimes we are just a joint venture. Sometimes, okay, we might have to do be a syndication. But really, I try to run everything as a partnership where everyone still has a say. Everyone is still involved as much as they want to be involved. And so I don't want to have like a bunch of people in the deal. It, you know, that makes it more difficult. I just find it fun, and real estate kind of lends itself to partnerships. Right. And if I can deliver on what I promise, all these people are happy, and then they just tell other people and other people, and it kind of just grows organically.
Yeah. Now, I like how you talk about delivering on your promises and making sure that you can and do that. So how do you find that line where you are, where you know what you can deliver, where you understand what you can deliver, and then you're able to do so?
So I've taken an approach that's not very conventional in my journey so far. In order to deliver on my promises, I have kept control of a lot of aspects of the deal, meaning I do my own property management. So I know, like, all my multifamily deals, I started all multifamily. Now I have commercial deals as well, but even those I'm managing them. Mm-hmm. So I know because of my experience, and I'm going to manage it. If I say I buy that property, I can turn it around and I can get rents to $850 a month on all of those units in this time frame. I know I can do it because I'm managing it myself. If I have to, you know, bust my butt and put more hours in and make sure that it gets done, I'll do that because I'm not depending on a third party property management to get it done. And that's where a lot of people, I've seen a lot of people get burnt that way. I mean, I've sold patches of property that were operating great to an outside buyer, and they hired property management, and the thing goes down. And I've bought plenty of properties that are professionally managed by property managers that I have then just taken to the next level. So yeah, I'm able to deliver what I say because I know I'm going to be physically doing that. I'm going to be in control of that portion of it. You know, if you buy it right for the right price and you finance it right, so that's the first two steps, but then you have to manage it right. Yeah. Those are like the three steps you have to have in order to have this successful property. And the first two, most people can figure out, like they can figure out financing and, you know, you can read a book on negotiating, you can buy it for the right price, you can understand that. But that management part is definitely something that bites a lot of people.
So how do you then, how do you avoid just, I mean, because you said sometimes if you have to work later, you have to, you know, have that problem. How do you avoid having that kind of take over your life? Like, how do you keep that from taking over your life? Because like you said, it's very unconventional. One of the first things that people do is like outsource that business, outsource that to somebody else. So how do you keep it from taking over your life so that you don't end up, you know, I mean, because part of this, right, you talk about like you want this financial independence. You want to be able to have time with your family. So how mm-hmm. do you keep this property management piece of it, this do-it-yourself piece of it, from taking over your life?
So I'm still new in my journey, right? Like, I don't have everything figured out. I'm not going to pretend I do. I'm only 6.5 years into it. And right now I have about 170 multifamily units. And then we're closing on Friday for another one. But so we'll have 4 rather large commercial properties as well. But what I realized was, okay, this multifamily, it does take time. So I'm getting people in place that, even though I'm doing it, I'm in charge, I have like a leasing person, like they go and do all the leasing, they list it and they do the leasing, they take care of all the showings and everything like that. So that took a lot of time off my plate. Because really, if your properties are full, property management is pretty easy. You know, if it's full of paying tenants, normally it's pretty easy. It's the terms, it's the when you're doing vacancies, it's all of that that really eats up your time. So I work on getting people to help me with the things that are taking more time. But I'm not there yet. I am still definitely putting time into it. But then I also saw, well, one, since I'm managing multifamily, I'm only buying multifamily in my area because it's very difficult to manage multifamily from afar.
Right.
But my commercial properties, I don't mind buying them anywhere in the Southeast because those are pretty easy to manage from afar. You don't have to be there all the time to, you know, hold the tenant's hands or anything like that. So I realized I can scale much bigger with commercial properties and go much further and still have control. So that is kind of why, and also because multifamily is very hard to find right now for a good price. But that is kind of why I also started shifting to do more commercial, because it fits my model better. I estimate, you know, I could probably self-manage with like one employee, probably like 200 million worth of commercial property, no problem. And it wouldn't even be that much work just because of the difference between that and multifamily.
That's an interesting perspective, because a lot of the time when we talk to folks who are doing this kind of thing, they're doing multifamily or something like that rather than commercial. So that kind of shift, and you recognizing how, okay, as I'm learning, as I'm going on this journey, I want to make this shift to commercial, and you're kind of making that shift a little bit as you go along. So that's very cool.
And I will say, if you have the right processes in place, and I'm not an expert in anything on a huge scale, but like I have my software for my multifamily property, it's Buildium. It works really great. I do all the accounting in there, and I still do all my accounting myself. And if you have that in place, I mean, because I was managing for another company as well, their units, at one point I was managing 250 units myself, just me.
Oh,
and
wow.
I had like one or two maintenance people helping. But at that time, 250 units myself. And people think like that's impossible. But like, no, you can do it. And I was doing all the accounting and everything for it. So it's definitely possible. People, I think, overestimate the amount of work that's required, because they just – but once you get in it and you get into a routine, you'd be surprised how much you can actually do. So there is something to be said about work on your business, but not in your business. But at some point, you do have to just put in the work, and you could realize, well, it's actually not that much work if I just sat down and did it. You know, people want to get to that next level too quick, in my opinion. They want to get to the point where, yeah, I don't have to do anything and the money's just coming in. Well, then what value are you adding to this equation? If you're not doing anything and the money's just coming in, where did your value come, right? Pretty soon someone will eat up your value.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think I like how you talk about setting up those systems, getting that software, kind of finding some tools to help you manage it a little bit better and get used to it. And I think a lot of people undervalue systems. In my own business, of course, I set up a variety of systems that just help me kind of move through things a little bit faster. So I really like how you talk about, you know, setting up those systems. And setting up systems can take work, like you said. I mean, it takes work to set up the right systems, but once you have them in place, like you said, suddenly like you're like, oh, I can manage these myself without that much trouble.
Yeah. Like, I'll give you an example of a system that I use that's probably not. So I use Buildium, right?
Right.
And I pay my bills once a week. I just pay them and then I stack them up. And then once a month, I do all my accounting. So my accounting for all my properties just takes me about one day to do all of it. And I mean, if you paid a bookkeeper, I mean, they charge a lot. Like it's like all this extra work or whatever, because they're doing a little bit a day. But if you batch it and if you just do it in one day, and all I do is I stack up my bills and I print out my bank account and I go through my software and I make sure it all matches. Okay, does my bank account match to my software? And that's it. Like I just go through, do, record all the entries, and that's it. And it only really takes me a day of work for, even though I have so much properties. So most people might be like, oh, I need to do this every day, or what am I doing? Da, 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 da. But I have found that if I just batch it and I do, you know, pay bills once a week, account for everything once a month, that I'm still able to do it. Now, at some point I will, you know, hire that out. But right. I think like, okay, it's just one day of work. Am I going to hire someone for just one day of work? And at some point, yeah, it will be worth it to hire that out. And then I'll be completely free of that one day of work. But I've got to find something else to do with my time. And there's only so much. The most valuable thing I can do is find properties. That's for sure. When I find a deal, that's the most valuable thing. But it's not like you can spend 8 hours a day every day just looking for properties. You know, there's a limit you have, you know.
Right.
And if you're actually, and I have found being really involved in my business, and it leads to more networking, more talking with people directly, more meeting with people directly, that then brings more deals. So being involved directly also has led to more deals that I wouldn't have had otherwise.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense too. And you know, like you said, eventually you'll get to the point where you feel like you need to outsource that a little bit more, but for now you're comfortable where you're at.
Right.
So Yeah. So what were some of the obstacles that you've had to overcome to kind of build this business? What were some of the stumbling blocks you ran into as you were moving forward? You know, you've talked about some of these strategies that you've used to kind of manage your systems and be able to be very involved in your business. But what were some of the issues that you ran into and some of the difficulties that you've had to overcome?
So obviously maintenance is a big thing with properties. And it's a big thing that I think people who have property managers don't realize how much they're actually spending on maintenance versus what it's actually costing. Because a lot of property management companies use maintenance to make money. It's like a big profit center for them.
Interesting. Okay.
And even if it's not used as a profit center, they don't really have the incentive to keep it down like I do. So really balancing that, how do I get good dependable maintenance work done on time? And I'm not physically doing it. In the beginning, I was physically doing it.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So I have some construction background and I'm pretty handy. And I mean, even this morning I was actually changing some locks. So there's still some things that I like to do just for fun or just because it's easier for me to do instead of just have someone come over and do it. But that I think was the biggest thing was how do I get dependable maintenance at a good price? And I'm still working with through that. I hired a full-time maintenance guy and then he decided to leave and he wanted to do something else. And I've gone through a couple and then you have, you know, doing subs and you know, it's independent, not dependable work. But all of that has been a major headache. But right now I was like, okay, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to hire people. I mean, in the past, I've been keeping my maintenance expense so low in comparison to other people that I've been a lot more profitable and people see my numbers. Like when I would sell them, I see my numbers. They're like, that's impossible. You can't have below a 30% expense ratio. It's like, yeah, you can. I did. These are not live numbers. Like they're real, but you might have some headaches trying to do it. And if you're a property management company, you don't really care to have those headaches to really keep the cost low on maintenance. Like there's no incentive to do that. It's like, whatever, we'll just pay the person, you know, $100 an hour for the plumber, no problem, even though a handyman could do it.
Yeah.
So I think that's the main one.
Yeah, that's the main one. Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that a lot of people talk about is like, it takes a while to like find quality people to help you with your business, whether it's finding a good maintenance person, whether it's finding a good property management company, whether it's finding good partners, like finding quality people to like do business with seems like it can be a hit and miss a lot of the time.
Yeah, and exactly. And I try to hold on to the ones I find like, and I have my system is if a tenant makes a request online or even texts me a request, I then text, like I share their contact information. So I have all their contacts saved with their address. Mm-hmm. So I have it saved on my phone. So then I just forward that contact to the AC guy and say, hey, this person's AC is not working. And that's it. I don't have to arrange when they're going there. The AC guy knows. He calls, he texts the tenant, he sets up the time, he goes, does it, and he sends me the bill. That's it. So that's another system that I put in place pretty early that really has been working well for me. It's just like I save all their contact information, then I just send that to the subs that I trust and they go take care of it. And so I'm able to do that for like my AC guy's really good with that. My appliance guy's really good with that. My pest control guy's really good with that. Like they're like trained, like, okay, I get the number and I just schedule it. So I'm never involved like, oh, I got to open the door, let them in or anything like that. No.
That's nice. That's good. So, yeah. So it's good. I love these systems you have set up and how you're working kind of through finding the people that you need. So as we kind of wrap up here, as we're getting toward the end, my question is, what would you tell somebody who is starting, wants to start in real estate? So what is your number one piece of advice for somebody who wants to get started in real estate and kind of move forward?
Well, it depends where you're at. I think the very first step is to get your own finances in order. Too many times people want to start real estate because they're bad with the money and they need money. And I think that's the worst time to start real estate if you just need money. Because if you make it, then you'll just spend it and you'll never see the real benefit of having real estate where you can grow it. So that's the first step is like make sure your finances are in order. And then the next step is, okay, once you've done that, like just start doing it because you can read about it. You can listen about it. You can hear these podcasts, but until you get that first property and start doing it, It doesn't even have to be a home run deal. Like, it just has to be good enough. And once you start doing it, then you'll see the aspects that you like, that you don't like, which ways you want to go. You'll start networking. You'll start seeing people. Yeah.
Very cool. All right. I really like that. A lot of people don't think about getting those finances in order before they get started. I like that idea of, okay, so like real estate is your next step after you've got yourself handled. So
yes.
Yeah. I like that. Well, thank you so much, David Grabiner, Lubono Capital. Thank you so much for joining us. Please let our audience know where they can find you online and how they can contact you.
Yeah. So feel free to, if you go to my website, lubonocapital.com, you could contact me through there, or on Instagram is pretty good too. It's at @DIY_landlord. That's @DIY_landlord. If you message me there, I normally message everyone back who messages me there. So.
All right. Very, very good. Well, thanks again for joining us, David. And thank you, everybody else, for listening. Make sure you subscribe to this podcast, Hometown Real Estate Heroes, where we talk to ordinary people about how they are building extraordinary lives through real estate. So once again, thank you, David. And we hope the rest of you have a great day.
Thank you, Miranda.
This is Mitch Stephen, and I would like to thank all the listeners for tuning into the Hometown Real Estate Heroes podcast. If you would like to be a guest on our show, please go to 1000houses.com/podcast, 2/apply. We invite all our listeners to share our Hometown Real Estate Heroes podcast, and also we'd appreciate it if you'd rate and or review our show wherever you listen to your podcasts. It would be greatly appreciated. It is our mission to spotlight local real estate entrepreneurs that are killing it in their market and to highlight their strategies and their personal story. It is our intention to help real estate investors learn and grow. Please be sure to subscribe, because we are sure that you will find very valuable nuggets in our content-driven episodes. This podcast is my way of giving back, and I would like to personally thank all of the Hometown Real Estate Heroes that have participated or that intend to participate. And I'd like to thank all of our listeners and hope that you tune in and share this with your friends and family often. Thank you very much. We're out of here.